The following is presented as an entertainment program emphasizing folklore. It is not intended as legal or medical advice in any way and should not be used to replace the advice of legal or medical professionals. Hello and welcome to the New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook episode for June 2024. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. We highly recommend that you also pick up a reliable almanac for folk magic, such as Benabel Wen's Metaphysician's Day Planner, The Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local farmer's almanac. Let's take a look at the moon for June 2024. The new moon is on June 6th this month, which, according to Benabel Wen's Metaphysician's Day Planner, is also the beginning of Horse Month. The full moon is on June 21st this month and is known as the Strawberry Moon, as well as the Green Corn Moon, the Horse Moon, and the Flower Moon. We begin the month with a waning moon in Aries and Taurus from the 1st to the 4th, so don't be surprised if you're feeling a little befuddled those days, since Aries affects the head and Taurus can impact the emotions. There's also a parade of planets along the ecliptic, starting early in the month, where you can see Jupiter, Mercury, Uranus, the Moon, Mars, Neptune, and Saturn in an arc from the constellation of Taurus on the sunrise horizon up to the constellation of Aquarius in the sky. Some planets may be hard to see, like Uranus and Neptune, but Jupiter, Mercury, Mars, and Saturn should all be fairly visible on a clear night. On the 5th and the 6th, the moon wanes in Gemini, which is also the current sun sign, which means a lot of chatter and feeling of needing to recharge social batteries. And I will make a quick side note that the 5th is my birthday, so feel free to light a candle and make a birthday wish along with me if you'd like to be social while also eating a cupcake from the comfort of your own home. On the 7th through the 9th, the moon begins waxing again in the sign of Cancer, and you may want to spend some time in the garden fertilizing, watering, and tending to those deep-rooted plants and rhizomes that you might be growing. On the 10th through the 13th, the moon grows in Leo and Virgo, which makes for good times to cut and prune and shape and weed in the garden, while also doing what you can to make your home space more beautiful to you. Save some of those cut flowers and put them around your house to help it feel like summer inside as well as out. On the 14th through the 16th, the moon is in Libra, and you may be feeling a need to do some stretching and work out some of the kinks in your back from all the gardening and other work you've been doing this month. It's also a good time to air out your home or your spell space and give it a quick refresh. It's Scorpio time with a waxing moon on the 17th and 18th, a good time to launch into any research projects you've got going or begin figuring out how you'll accomplish difficult tasks. The 19th through the 21st is Sagittarius season, as well as the summer solstice on the 20th and a shift into the solar sign of Cancer. This is a great time to do an outdoor bonfire party or a dress-up afternoon tea or anything that would make you feel connected to your community and give you a chance to dance among some fireflies. And maybe even some fairies. The moon begins waning in Capricorn on the 22nd and continues through Aquarius and Pisces on the 24th through the 27th. It's time to be a little introspective and do some solitary activities and maybe recharge your mental and emotional batteries. You can also check your garden for pests and do some fertilizing on the soil effectively at this time. The 28th and 29th are a waning moon in Aries again, shifting to waning in Taurus on the 30th, closing out the month with a little bit more of that befuddlement from the beginning. So don't be surprised if you need a nap or a chance to just lounge by the pool or on the beach by the time you get to the end of the month. Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for one another, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meanings of those cards in general and then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they're read in actual practice. This month I pulled the Four of Clubs for Lane. This card generally represents a horse and cart or plowed field. In other words, a place that is being prepared for something in the future, or the steady work of moving forward. It can often feel like we're stagnant when we have to do all that busy fiddling that goes along with making plans and getting our ducks in a row, but it's important to remember that we're actually making progress, even if we don't see the fruits of it for some time. For Lane, I'd say that this is a note not to get frustrated when she feels stuck or like she isn't reaching goals that she has for herself. It's a marathon, not a sprint after all, and she's doing good work that will eventually pay off. Even if right now it looks like a big patch of dirt. In time, it will be a field overflowing with the green growth of her future.
For this month, I wanted to do a birthday reading for Corey, since his birthday is on the 5th of this month. I used my Buffy the Vampire Slayer tarot deck that Corey gave to me as a gift, and asked what Corey needs or wants for his birthday, and drew the Hermit. For fans of the show, this particular Hermit card is Oz, everyone's favorite taciturn werewolf. Shown to be a man of few words, but with a frighteningly high EQ for a high school student, he locks himself away a few nights a week to keep him and others safe. While I don't think Corey is quite that grumpy, I do think there is wisdom in learning to take some time for yourself, especially if you're feeling spread thin. There's nothing wrong with needing some time alone or just wanting to lock yourself away for a day or two. I've always been drawn to the Hermit card, as it reminds us that solitude is not always loneliness. On the Buffy card, Oz plays guitar alone in the moonlight, and I love this interpretation of the card. It encourages you to take time to yourself, pursue creative hobbies, and recharge under the light of a full moon.
For our folk divination method of the month, I begin with a passage taken from the 19th century book Observations on Popular Antiquities by John Brand. He says, "On the 23rd day of June, which is the eve of St. John the Baptist, men and women were accustomed to gather together in the evening by the seaside or in some certain houses, and there adorn a girl, who was her parents' first begotten child, after the manner of a bride. They then feasted and leaped after the manner of bacchanals, and danced and shouted as if they were wont to do on their holy days. After this, they poured into a narrow-necked vessel some of the sea water, and put into it also certain things belonging to each of them. Then, as if the devil gifted the girl with the faculty of telling future things, they would inquire with a loud voice about the good or evil fortune that should attend them. Upon this, the girl would take out of the vessel the first thing that came to hand, and shew it and give it to the owner, who upon receiving it was so foolish as to imagine himself wiser as to the good or evil fortune that should attend him." The description of a midsummer game, which is similar to something found in other areas of folklore that I often refer to as a calling circle, is perhaps a little condescending, but an interesting variation on the tradition. It involves placing objects around a person, letting them pick one at random to determine a future calling or vocation when it's a calling circle. But in this case, however, the custom is specifically related to midsummer and the sea, so you could easily adapt this rite for your own uses at a midsummer gathering. You simply need a pot that you can't see into easily, but which will fit a hand in the neck like a wide-mouthed vase or flower pot. This gets filled with water, seawater if you have it, although you could easily add water with a bit of salt to get the effect. Each person gathered would add a personal object to the water, and elect a person to be the diviner who draws the objects out. The attendees would take turns asking about their good fortune, and the diviner would draw out an object. The object could then be interpreted as a sign of good or ill favor, or an indication of some form of luck or future happening that is coming the way of the questioner. At the end, all objects get returned to their owners, and be careful about submerging some things in salt water as it can be corrosive to things made of metal, for example. If you do play this game, we'd love to hear about it. Have fun, and happy midsummer.
Witch's Proverb of the Month. "I am not afraid of storms, for I am learning how to sail my ship." Louisa May Alcott.
No!
Our folktale this month is two abbreviated accounts of the St. John's Eve fete done by Marie Laveau in New Orleans. The first account is from Robert Tallant's Voodoo in New Orleans. "On Monday morning, St. John's Day, I went to the French Market for the express purpose of finding out the exact spot where the Voodoo Festival would be held this year. I took the 8 o'clock train on the Pontchartrain Railroad. Arriving at the lake, I fooled around a little, saw great crowds. I hired a skiff and pulled to the mouth of Bayou St. John. Upon arriving at the shanty, I found congregated about 200 persons of mixed races. Soon there arrived a skiff containing 10 persons, among whom was the Voodoo Queen, Marie Laveau. She was hailed with hurrahs. The people were about equally divided, male and female, a few more females. The larger portion of the crowd was black, but about 100 whites, say 30 or 40 men, and the remainder women. Upon the arrival of Marie Laveau, she made a few remarks in gumbo French, Creole, I presume the reporter means, and ended them by singing, "Ça y est ma coupe, c'est," to which all hands joined in the chorus of "Mademoiselle Marie Chauffouzet." The song ended, and orders were given by the Queen to build a fire near the edge of the lake as possible, which was done, everyone being compelled to furnish a piece of wood for the fire and making a wish as they threw it on. Then a large cauldron was put on the fire. It was filled with water, brought in a beer barrel. Then salt was put in by an old man who spoke something in Creole. Then black pepper was put in by a young mixed-race girl, and she sang while putting in the pepper. Then the box was brought up by the fire, from which was taken a black snake. He was cut into three pieces, the Trinity. One piece was put in by Marie Laveau, one piece by the old man who put in the salt, and one piece by the young girl who put in the pepper. Then all joined in the chorus of the same song, "Mademoiselle Marie Chauffouza," and then the queen called for a cat. It was brought. She cut its throat and put it into the kettle. Another repetition of the same chorus, and a black rooster was brought to the queen. She tied its feet and head together and put it into the pot alive. Repetition of the chorus, then came an order from the queen for everyone to undress, which all did amid songs and yells. The queen then took from her pocket a shot bag full of white and colored powders. She gave orders for everyone to join hands in a circle around the pot. Then she poured the powders into the pot, sang a verse of some oracle song, to which everyone joined in a chorus while dancing around the pot. "C'est l'amour, oui maman, c'est l'amour." And everybody went down to the lake, remained in the bath about half an hour, and in half an hour the horn was blown, a seashell, and all hands hurried back to the queen and set up another chorus to a verse she sang to the same tune as the first. And after the song, she said, "You can now eat." Account 2, from Zora Neale Hurston's book, Mules and Men. Out on Lake Pontchartrain at Bayou St. John holds a great feast every year on the eve of St. John's, June 24th. It is Midsummer Eve, and the sun gives special benefits then and needs great honor. The special drum is played then. It is a cowhide stretched over a half barrel, beaten with a jawbone. Some say a man, but I think they don't know. I think it's the jawbone of an ass or a cow. She holds the feast of St. John's partly because she's Catholic, and partly because of hoodoo. The ones around her altar fix everything for the feast. Nobody sees Marie Laveau for 9 days before the feast, but then when the great crowd of people at the feast call upon her, she would rise out of the waters of the lake with a great communion candle burning upon her head and another in each of her hands. She walked upon the waters to the shore. As a little boy, I saw her myself. When the feast was over, she went back to the lake, and nobody saw her for 9 days again. An account from Luke Turner. In both of these accounts, which I've cleaned up as much as I can and shortened in several places for the sake of recording here, we have narratives about the famed voodoo queen of New Orleans, Marie Laveau. Laveau was a real historical figure, potentially more than one, as there was at least one of her heirs who adopted her name and continued her legacy after her death. But as these accounts probably tell you, there is as much myth-making about her as there is historical fact. Even these stories, purportedly first or second-hand accounts witnessing her rites, are widely divergent and sensationalized, focusing on exoticizing Vaudouin rituals in Talant's case, and on elevating the mystery of Laveau as a magical figure in Hurston's. We do see some common threads. The emphasis on being near the lake, on gathering as a group, the presence of fire and food. All of these likely derive from at least somewhat real rituals held in or around New Orleans in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, although some of the details are wildly unlikely. For example, the adding of a black cat and rooster whole to a pot that would then become food for a feast is not only cruel, but likely to make people very sick, so Talant's story is probably emphasizing those points to make Vaudouin seem barbaric or pagan for the sake of his largely white readership. More to the point, these narratives show us why it's sometimes so difficult to understand folklore. We want to share the most interesting version of the story. We want the listener to feel the magic and the excitement and wonder we felt witnessing something, or hear a tale for the first time. And so we add in our flourishes. We tell a tale that sizzles with enchantment and action. We provide the scintillating details that make someone feel like they were really there. There's nothing wrong with telling a good story, of course, but it's important to remember that folklore is often very much there to entertain us. And when we assume that it's literally true, whether that's a story about someone rising out of a lake carrying lit candles, or eating a forbidden fruit in a secret magical garden at the prompting of a talking snake, we miss the point, and often wind up painting real people with broad brushstrokes to make them seem other. Talent's narrative is supposed to be about real events and people, but serves to alienate the readers from its subjects. History gets lost in the telling. But many don't realize that's what's happening, and for Talent's readers, his accounts seem like an accurate report of Vodun, even though it isn't. We have to be careful about how we handle the stories we tell, especially about cultures and mythologies that are not our own. At the same time, we do see threads of truth here too, with the use of fire and water and dancing. Folklore carries much with it, bringing us little glimpses of our collective history and our collective story. It's part of what makes it so magical, but also part of what makes it so difficult sometimes. So the next time you tell a tale, think about what you keep, what you change, what you embellish, what you tell is true, and what you do to keep your audience listening. What do your tales carry with them? And what should you be leaving behind? We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work.
This month's craft is flower crowns. A tradition found in Judica Elish's Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells says that wear a mugwort wreath around your brow on Midsummer's Eve to banish headaches for a year. Making and wearing flower crowns is a great way to celebrate the season. Make yourself feel a little pretty, and also give yourself a little magical blessing as well. Flower crowns, also called daisy chains, can be made a few different ways, but we'll focus on the most basic, all-natural way here. You'll need to gather up a lot of flowers, which should have flexible, long stems. Field daisies, asters, black-eyed Susans, and chicory all work fairly well for this, but you can try any flower you like as long as it's safe. You'll take 3 stems of any flower, then begin braiding them together, like a 3-part hair braid. We'll put a link to a video tutorial on this in our show notes if that sounds confusing. After you've got it about half braided, add another 3 flowers a few inches below the first bundle, and continue braiding, weaving the new stems in among the old. When those are about half done, add another bundle of 3 and weave these in with a second set of stems. Continue until you have a chain of flowers long enough you can gently make a circlet out of them. Then, carefully weave the ending stems into the stems from the first bundle to finish the crown. If you need to, you could always have a bit of thread or string handy and simply wind it around each stem bundle as you add new flowers to it, then tie the crown together at the end. You might also pick some flowers based on their magical properties and associations and weave those in. St. John's wort for happiness and love, honeysuckle for sweetness and success, poppies for dreaming and vision. Wear your crown as you do additional spell work to boost its power, or just to absorb the magic of the crown as a sort of blessing on you and your future work. And of course, wear them when frolicking around a midsummer bonfire to make sure you look like the gorgeous fairy royalty you are.
That is it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month, and we hope that you're having a wonderful start to your summer. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where $1 a month or whatever you can afford will get you some fun perks, access to our Discord server, early access to episodes, all kinds of fun stuff. So please feel free to stop by and do that. If you can't do that, we totally understand. Your enthusiastic support is always welcome in other ways too. If you would like to share us with your friends, share us out on social media, follow our social media accounts, all of those things are wonderful and do help us get found by other folks. You can also respond to Spotify has questions that it will post every time we do a new episode. Oftentimes it lets you do ratings and rankings as well, things like that. So If you have questions or comments about this or any other episode, you can reach us at newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com or compassandkey@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. You can find all of our episodes and all of our articles on folk magic in North America at our website, newworldwitchery.com. And you can find our social media accounts as well as upcoming classes, public appearances, etc. at newworldwitchery.com/find-us. Once again, we appreciate you being here with us and enjoying this June episode of our Folk Magician's Notebook. We'll be back again real soon with more folk magic in North America for you. But until then, thanks for listening and be well.